Good morning, Your Honors. I'm David Letterkramer for the appellants. May it please the Court, I am here this morning to persuade Your Honors that the District Court's decision was an error and should be reversed. Let me begin by stating that the context and the history of the bank's relationship with the McDonald's is of great assistance in understanding why the bank has standing. The bank specified in considerable detail the legal, banking, and investment structure of the parties' relationship. That relationship is spelled out in three contracts, and those three contracts comprise about 30 single-spaced pages of terms. They appear at pages 54 through 86 of the appendix. It was the best, most comprehensive thinking the bank could supply in creating this relationship, and the McDonald's, of course, agreed to it. A very important part of that relationship had to do with the question of what was to happen if the parties fell into dispute concerning the handling of the investment management account or the parties' agreement. Who would be the arbiter of that 30 pages of contract provisions and the relationship? Who would judge whether J.P. Morgan would be liable to the McDonald's or not? And if so, how much?
And I know, and we all know that generally there's an injury that flows from the breach. And your basic position is that the breach itself is an injury. Could you go into more detail as to how you were harmed?
I would be delighted. First, to finish the last point, because that's part of the harm. It was a key decision to have a court, not an arbitrator, decide what this relationship meant and who would be liable and for what. If an arbitrator was going to do the deciding, discretion would be broad, review would be narrow, and errors would be very hard to correct. So the parties chose
an
arbitrator.
So you don't trust FINRA?
It's not a question of trust. It's a question of choice. It's a much different choice, and a choice was made. And this court, in the Adams against Raintree case, understood the significance of that choice and the rationale. It was Judge Posner's decision. I'm going to paraphrase and quote, but he said that an arbitrator would be exercising freewheeling discretion, those were his words, subject only to very light judicial review, those were his words, and he concluded that a party might consequently think it very important to require that disputes be litigated, not arbitrated. That's 702 F3rd at 440. And the Second Circuit, in the second of the Wachovia decisions, in a case just like this, where Wachovia was a bank, it was not named a respondent in the FINRA proceeding, the Second Circuit held Wachovia the bank did in fact have standing to assert a provision of its contract that would bar the FINRA arbitration, even though, just like J.P. Morgan here, it was not a respondent. Now, let's answer your question a little bit more directly and ask, much as the district court did below, so the bank was not named in the FINRA proceeding, and its employees were, and its sister corporation was. For purposes of standing, the question is, so what? Why do you care? Why are you harmed? In one sense, because we chose an umpire and we didn't get that umpire, but then there are some pretty concrete consequences. The bank, under its bylaws, was required to defend the employees, Olms and Perry.
Does your theory on that depend on the bylaws, or is it more general respondeat superior liability?
Both, as well as you could even add.
Bylaws can be changed, right?
They can, but there's also a fair amount of common law, and many states have statutes requiring employers to indemnify employees for harm suffered in the course of if they're furthering.
And sometimes there are exceptions. Do you agree in this case that the bank is responsible absolutely and unconditionally for indemnifying Ms. Olms and Mr. Perry for any liability that might be imposed under the arbitration?
I do.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. So the bank has to indemnify and defend. And you mentioned vicarious liability. The bank was in the crosshairs of the vicarious liability claim that the McDonald's pled as part of their statement of claim in the FINRA arbitration. The bank's investment discretion at the heart of this relationship, at the heart of those three contracts, is under attack in the FINRA arbitration. The bank's conduct was going to be judged actionable or not in the FINRA arbitration. All the contract provisions that might provide exculpation, define responsibilities, define how the investment was, the discretion was to be exercised, those all had to be interpreted in the FINRA arbitration. The bank's very own customers, the McDonald's, were the claimants in the FINRA arbitration. And, not insignificantly, the bank is a National Banking Association chartered under Title 12 of the United States Code. As a nationally chartered bank, its regulator is the OCC. The OCC could examine this relationship as part of any examination it might choose to do. FINRA is a self-regulatory organization. It has no powers under Title 12. It is not a creature of Title 12. The FINRA arbitration takes the bank out of its regulatory structure and puts it in a foreign agency. Those are very concrete interests and consequences of the banks that were at stake in the FINRA proceeding. Standing only requires a personal stake. It can be economic. It can be non-economic, but it's always a minimal burden.
Is it correct, though, that the discretionary trading account is under the umbrella of the bank rather than J.P. Morgan Securities?
The contracts are absolutely clear, and Judge
Zabel. The answer
Zabel,
is yes?
Yes, the answer is yes.
Okay. So, I mean, but the bank, though, has employed people who are FINRA members, right, and is in the business of this discretionary investment advisor.
The bank
so
is in the business.
So your description of FINRA as a foreign agency is a little bit jarring as a result.
Mm. Let me explain. In the Wachovia decision, the Second Circuit, very clearly held that the contractual structure would be respected where there are dual-hatted employees.
I understand that.
Here, the contracts are very clear that only J.P. Morgan, the bank, can exercise investment discretion. And as Judge Zabel held the first two times below, when Olms and Perry were acting to exercise investment discretion, they were acting solely and unambiguously on the bank's behalf.
I understand that, counsel, but you seem to be critical of FINRA, and you know I think I get where you're coming from, but I'm just a little struck by the fact that all of this complexity is generated by J.P. Morgan's own choices about its structure. And I recognize Glass-Steagall was repealed some years ago, but you've got an investment advisory business operating within the bank itself with employees who are themselves members of FINRA. So I think I guess I have a little trouble if you're trying to blame anybody else for the complexity here.
Hmm. I don't view it as a question of blame. I view it as a question of looking carefully at the structure and recognizing that the law and the precedents will respect that structure. The structure here, it's very clear. The J.P. Morgan securities contract says we do not exercise discretion. The J.P. Morgan banking contract says we do exercise discretion. The J.P. Morgan securities contract says our obligations are not the obligations of the bank. They are separate obligations. These contracts specified a strict divide. They are not ambiguous. They are not overlapping. And once you recognize the strict divide, you see that J.P. Morgan, the bank, was injured because the dispute resolution mechanism it chose with McDonald's for this kind of dispute was not respected.
Now, you've got more time, but you're into your rebuttal time.
I did okay. see that.
All right.
One quick other quick question, counsel. J.P. Morgan Securities is a plaintiff in this federal action?
Yes, it is.
Why is that?
Because we felt that the two entities that had all of the contract provisions, the two rights-holding parties, should be plaintiffs in tandem.
You agree that JPMS is a proper respondent in the FINRA arbitration?
Only as to the Apollo investments.
Right. Yeah.
We believe that J.P. Morgan Securities...
And that's perfectly okay, right? I mean, I realize there may or may not be a good claim on it, but...
It's perfectly okay with us. Let there be no mistake about it. That was under the brokerage contract and is subject to FINRA arbitration.
Do you want to say anything about the Rule 19 question quickly before you sit down?
I'd be delighted to. We don't think Olmsted and Perry were necessary or indispensable parties, and we think it's a pretty simple analysis. It comes right from the text of the rule. The first step is, are they required? To determine if they're required, the first question is, can the court accord complete relief? In this case, the only claim remaining is the injunction claim. If the injunction is granted, barring the McDonald's from proceeding in FINRA, that's complete relief. We're fine there. Second question is, do the absent parties claim an interest in the proceeding that might be impaired, or as a practical matter, they can't protect that interest? Olmsted and Perry are in privity with the bank. They're employees. They have a fiduciary duty to uphold the bank's contracts. That's all this proceeding does, is it upholds the bank's contracts. They have no interest. If they did, intervention is a far better cure than dismissal. The last piece of it is, will the absence of the absent parties subject anybody who is present to double, multiple, or inconsistent obligations because of the claimed interest? They don't have a claimed interest. If the injunction issues, the arbitration will stop. The McDonald's will have that result and only that result. And if the injunction doesn't issue, the arbitration will go forward. The McDonald's will have that result and only that result. So the required party part of Rule 19 is not satisfied, and I don't think we ever have to get to the equity and good conscience part. But if Your Honor would like to discuss equity and good conscience, I'm happy to do so.
One other quick question.
Sure.
Should, if we agree with you, should the injunction be limited to the GAP fund arbitration?
Yes, it should, Your Honor.
What was the scope of the original preliminary injunction? Did it cover that, or did it also cover the Apollo fund?
I believe that everybody agreed that the Apollo fund was an arbitrable issue.
Okay. Thanks.
We did not ask for relief on that score.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Edwards.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Sam Edwards here on behalf of the appellees and Mr. and Mrs. McDonald. This case is before the Court of Appeals as a result of appellant's blatant attempts at procedural fencing through the selective inclusion of a party that was not named in the arbitration and the selective exclusion of two parties that were named in the arbitration. J.P. Morgan Bank and J.P. Morgan Securities have attempted to take the McDonald's out of their home state and bring them to Illinois and to place them in federal court. All of the reason why that was done and why J.P. Morgan Bank became a party and why Olmsted and Perry were excluded as parties was based upon this procedural gamesmanship.
But let me ask you this. As I understand it, the FINRA arbitration suit can affect J.P. Morgan's rights, even though the bank is not a named party.
I would disagree with that respectfully, Your Honor. It cannot. There's no question.
Aren't you seeking liability? Aren't you seeking the bank to indemnify to stand responsible for anything you might win against Holmes and Perry?
No, Your Honor. We're not seeking anything on behalf of the bank. The bank was not named as a party in the underlying FINRA arbitration.
In the Illinois case, though, you're seeking an indication that a judgment that the bank is responsible for Holmes and Perry's conduct.
In the Illinois state court
right.
action, we have filed a claim against J.P. Morgan Bank, effectively to preserve that action because the federal court dismissed it out. At the point that they did that, we had statute of limitations concerns.
So you don't think if you prevail against Holmes and Perry in the FINRA arbitration that you would be able to collect from the bank?
Absolutely not.
Did you check their personal net worth before pursuing that?
Do
you have any idea whether they stand ready to compensate your clients?
It's not necessary for them to do so, although we do believe that they would be able to compensate the clients. Both are fairly successful investment brokers and have been in the business for a number of years. It's likely they could, but J.P. Morgan Securities, who employed them, who they were registered representatives of, was a party to the FINRA arbitration. J.P. Morgan Securities is obligated to supervise its employees and its registered representatives. Holmes, Perry, J.P. Morgan Securities are all FINRA members. They are required to follow FINRA rules, which have guidelines about how securities are sold.
The problem here is that 95% of the FINRA arbitration claim has to do with the account that was at the bank and not with the brokerage. The subject matter, the core subject matter of the FINRA arbitration pertains to the losses sustained by the investment management account and not the brokerage account. The Apollo Fund is just a minute portion of that claim, and in fact, as I understand the facts, didn't lose any money. The account that lost money is the one that was held by the bank. So you've sued the two individuals and the securities subsidiary, but over losses sustained by the account that's held by the bank. So the real subject matter and the real party in interest is the bank.
The real parties in interest are the FINRA members who have FINRA obligations.
Well, you've sued them over conduct that relates solely to the account that's deposited at the bank. They didn't have any discretion over the brokerage account. That was a self-guided account, so you don't have a claim against the securities firm or the individuals in the FINRA arbitration having to do with the Apollo account with the brokerage subsidiary because it didn't lose any money, first of all, and it was self-directed. So the only subject matter for litigation, whether within an arbitration or within a federal or state court litigation, is the losses sustained by the account at the bank, the investment management account, which was invested in this Gap fund. I mean, that's what the fight is about here. So we're going to look past all of these obfuscations to what the real fight is about, and it's about the account at the bank.
As the Justice pointed out, the issue with that is, in the convoluted nature of it, is J.P. Morgan's fault in terms of determining
I'm trying to cut through all of the what you've just referred to as something convoluted formalities here to what's really at stake. And what's really at stake between the parties is a fight over the losses sustained in the account at the bank over which the bank had discretion. That's what you're fighting about. So you sued in the wrong forum and you sued the wrong parties. Mm-hmm. And the bank is entitled to enforce its forum selection clause. Its interests are clearly at stake.
From a standing point of view, we continue to disagree with that because it assumes that they're going to have to pay the judgment on it and that they would have some obligation. They gave, for the first time in their reply...
This isn't a derivative standing argument. It's a direct standing argument. I mean, there's a derivative standing argument being made by virtue of the duty to defend and indemnify, but that's not the core of it. The core of it is that the bank's interests are implicated because what you're suing over are losses sustained by the account that was held at the bank and it was directed by the bank. Do you deny that that's the subject matter of the claim?
No, we don't deny that the Gap Fund is the subject matter of the complaint. We deny
right,
how the contract...
Right, that's what the fight is about.
That's the principal part. I agree with you it's 95% of the fight. I would not agree that it's the entirety of the fight. It's been very... limited the discussion about the Apollo Fund. It's not as simple as the Apollo Fund's been profitable. It's a It's a different kind of investment. I don't want to get too in-depth in that because it would take up all of my time. But I would agree with you that 95% of the complaint, losses-wise, is related to the gap fund. I would not agree with the principle that that necessarily invokes the bank or that that somehow takes FINRA out of its jurisdiction. You still have FINRA licensed people who are selling a product, and they still have to live up to certain FINRA standards. And the FINRA rules are clear that if you're a customer of a member and you make a claim against that member, as long as it's done in relationship to their business, then it is appropriate for FINRA arbitration.
You consented to a different forum.
The prior existing...
That forum selection clause was bargained for. It was a bargain for right in the investment management agreement, right?
No, Your Honor, it's not a bargain for. It's part of a form contract and
well,
a general...
It was agreed to. Didn't the McDonald's deprive the bank of that right when they sought arbitration? I mean, it was a provision that was agreed to. You're not trying to back away from that, are you?
I'm not trying to back away from the agreement. Just the terminology that it was a bargain for is a little bit misleading in the sense that it's not a bargain for. It is... You have to understand, they signed a two-page document. That two-page document referred to the three agreements that they talk about here, including the general terms and conditions. Buried in that general terms and conditions is the language that we're talking about.
Which, that buried language, they were responsible for reading, buried or not.
Assuming
correct?
They got a copy of...
You're not trying to say they didn't get a copy.
Well...
Are you?
They testified.
You started out saying you were accusing them of gamesmanship. I think there's some going on your part as well.
There really isn't, Your Honor. And if you look back all the way back to the statement of claim filing, it really demonstrates why there wasn't. We didn't sue them under any of the agreements. And frankly, the McDonald's didn't have those agreements at the time. When you look at the original complaint, it sued, and the basis for raising FINRA jurisdiction was not based upon the contractual agreements between the parties, which McDonald's did not have a copy of when we filed the claim. It was based entirely on their status as customers of J.P. Morgan Securities and Ohms & Perry, who are all FINRA members. That is a proper claim under FINRA guidelines.
I'm startled. By the idea that suit was filed before there was there any exchange of information or correspondence where the bank would have at least provided you with those contracts?
No, Your Honor.
Before the claim was filed? Okay. In terms of the conflict between the FINRA ground rules and the forum selection clause in the contract with the bank, it looks like the Second Circuit has addressed this problem in the Wachovia cases. I didn't see any discussion of that in your brief. I'd be interested in what you have to tell us about whether we should agree with those, distinguish them, disagree, or what.
Sure, I'll be happy to address that. And we didn't address that in our brief because it wasn't brought into this case until the reply brief was filed. So we didn't have an opportunity to respond to that, but I'm happy to. To the extent that it's being read the way that J.P. Morgan suggests that it should be, we do believe this court should simply disagree with it.
Why?
Because it effectively allows J.P. Morgan or other firms to make a determination after the fact whether or not an arbitration agreement applies.
After the fact?
Sure. J.P. Morgan made the determination, not the McDonald's, whether or not the Gap portfolio was going to end up in the brokerage account or whether the bank account. That was not a determination that's made with or consulted with the McDonald's. J.P. Morgan gets to make that determination. They then can make the determination at that time whether or not they want to go to arbitration and put it in the brokerage account or whether they want to avoid arbitration and go to court. That effectively nullifies the validity of the arbitration agreement. To the extent that it would be read that way, which is how J.P. Morgan appears they want this court to read it, then the court should disagree with it. To the extent that the court needs to distinguish it, it's a very easily distinguishable case. You're talking about two very sophisticated parties, a hedge fund, and dealing with an interest rate swap with truly negotiated agreements where they discuss these terms. And the issue really wasn't arbitrability in the Wachovia cases. The issue in Wachovia was that the hedge fund was attempting to get around a waiver provision that effectively said, you're not going to rely on anything that we say. And then they invoked FINRA and said, well, we're going to bring it into FINRA and say that we're going to get around that. That's what the issue was. And that's really what the fight was over. And that's why Wachovia had a different standing there, because it was an attempt to basically get rid of a provision that would have allowed for liability, which is entirely different from the issue of arbitrability and whether or not these are arbitrable claims. And this is all dealing with the standing issue. Even if the court were to get beyond the standing issue, we still have a necessary parties problem. And what the court has to ask itself is, why weren't Olmes and Perry named in the underlying injunction? It wasn't an accident. This wasn't an oversight. This was very purposeful. The purpose was in order to divest and basically to create diversity jurisdiction where it didn't exist. That was the purpose. The purpose behind adding in the bank was to bring it to Illinois and to use that contract, that general terms contract language. The purpose in not allowing Olmes and Perry into the case was it would have destroyed diversity jurisdiction. And that's very problematic because they are absolutely required parties in this case. They are required parties because of the relief that J.P. Morgan sought. J.P. Morgan would like to color
it. Counsel, let me ask you about that. In Rule 65 injunctions, when an injunction is issued against a defendant, it applies to all of that defendant's employees, agents, officers, directors, et cetera, right?
I believe so.
They don't have to be named individually to get relief against them that's effective against them, do they?
If the injunction is against them, then that would be correct.
Okay. So why does an employer that's seeking relief on behalf of itself and its employees and agents and so on need to name all of those employees, agents, directors, officers as plaintiffs?
Because those people were named as parties in the underlying arbitration.
So what? I mean, injunctions benefit people who are not named all the time.
This isn't a benefit, Your Honor. Keep in mind, they want to paint this as this was an ancillary result of it. It might occur this way. They specifically requested, we request that you enjoin the McDonald's from proceeding against J.P. Morgan Securities and Olmes mm-hmm. and Perry. It wasn't a, hey, this might affect them as well. This was a very specific
sure.
request. And when they specifically requested relief on behalf of two parties, they needed to include them. And keep in mind, all of their argument continues to rely on this principle that, well, if we won the injunction, then an injunction could have been crafted that would have effectively fixed this. The problem is that assumes that they won the injunction. What happens when they lose the injunction? What happens is we then have to go back someplace else and go fight the issue because while an injunction granted may affect them, an injunction denied would not. Olmes and Perry would still be free to deny that they have to continue with the FINRA arbitration. And so we would have to litigate the issue all over again.
In what sense are their interests impaired? They're aligned with the bank.
They're not necessarily aligned with the bank. They've been involved in now 3 years' worth of litigation. There's an assumption and always been one made.
Well, make an argument. Why aren't they aligned with the bank?
Mr. Perry is no longer an employee of the bank and has not been
an
employee for years.
Yeah, but it's his conduct while an employee at the bank that's at issue.
Because
so their interests are absolutely aligned. If an injunction is issued, they don't have to arbitrate.
But again, that presupposes the proposition that Olmes and Perry don't want to arbitrate their claims. Their voice hasn't been heard, and it can't be heard. They can't appeal the decision. If they don't like what the district court would have said, then they would be stuck with whatever that would be.
Why would they not want relief from the arbitration?
Because the arbitration is a much faster form. It's a form that would have included, that does include, an industry person on the panel, so someone that they can speak to, that understands the lingo, that understands the relationships. And there's a reason why the Supreme Court came out in 1987 and said that these FINRA arbitrations are absolutely enforceable as a pre-dispute arbitration agreement. It's because there was a sense that these FINRA arbitrations are a better place to resolve securities disputes where you have knowledgeable arbitrators who understand the business. The industry has fought for decades to try to enforce that because of a belief by people like Olmes and Perry that they're going to get a better shake and have a better chance in FINRA arbitration with people who really understand their position than a jury or judges who have never been in the business and never been around that. So it's improper, we believe, for this court, and certainly it would have been for the district court, to just oppose that Olmes and Perry must have the exact same interest without them having a voice in this case. They are affected. Not only are they tangentially affected, they are directly affected. They ask for relief for them, and if they're going to ask for relief for two parties, they needed to include them.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. How much time? Is he 2 minutes?
In the American Patriot Insurance Agency case, this court said very clearly that a forum selection clause was not to be defeated by suing only an affiliate or the employees of the party to the contract. The court went on to say that if a forum selection clause could easily be defeated by the choice of provisions to sue on, or the legal theories to press, or of the defendants to name in a suit, then forum selection clauses would be empty, and they manifestly are not empty. That's at 364 F3rd at 888. The absence or the opposite of emptiness has to be standing here. For the clause not to be empty, J.P. Morgan has to have the ability to seek a remedy that would enforce it. And just to go back to how the bank is touched by the FINRA proceeding, to sum it up, the bank was injured when its proxies were hailed into FINRA for the very purpose of calling the bank's own conduct into question. This case
Mr.
is...
Letter, Kramer, just,
I'm sorry.
Well, you indulgence my colleagues just for a second. Mr. Edwards told us that the bank decided whether the funds were going to go into the bank or J.P. Morgan Securities.
Not true. The bank was
following. First tell me what the case is and where we figure that out from the record.
All right. If you excuse me. If you look at the record, you will see that Ms. Olms signed the subscription agreements for the Gap Fund. The McDonald's did not sign the subscription agreement for the Gap Fund. When she signed, that signified that the bank, as the principal, or it was exercising the discretion under the investment management account agreement. And if you look at the account statements, you will see that it flows through to the investment management account, which has a different number and a different prefix letter than the bank account. It is exactly the opposite with the Apollo Fund. The McDonald's signed the subscription agreement, and the bank account reflects it. The account statement reflects it in the brokerage account. The housekeeping and the decision-making is exactly how the contract specified it. It's not a question of one day somebody woke up and said to the appropriate person, assign the Gap investment to a bank account so we'll never have to arbitrate. The arbitration as to the Apollo investment in the securities firm's account has to be arbitrated. We accept that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
All right. The case will be taken under advisement.